Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Franchise Interviews, where for over 4 years we've been asking the franchisepreneurs who own one. I'm your host, Marty McDermott, with my co-host, Don Johnson. And if you ever dreamed of owning your own business, then you've come to the right place. We have a great show today. We're meeting with Hair Club New England CEO, Stephen Barth. And this year, it's Hair Club of New England's 30th year in business. Steve currently owns the New England franchise locations made throughout Massachusetts, Connecticut, New Hampshire, and Rhode Island, and is Hair Club's most successful franchisee. And that's coming up on segment two of Franchise Interview. So stick around because we got a great show.
Are you one of those special people who are willing to go after your dreams and goals? Are you ready to fulfill that dream of owning your own business with the security of a proven brand, the opportunity to take control of your future and own a Rita's Italian Ice franchise is within your reach?
Rita's is seeking success-oriented individuals who are ready to make a change in their life, and Rita's offers unparalleled training and support to assure your success. And did you know the frozen treat industry is a recession-proof industry, and there are Rita's in 23 states currently with 540 stores open. Rita's Italian Ice has been around for 25 years and is listed as a top-performing franchise by the Wall Street Journal.
Now here's the really good part. Rita's Italian Ice is a unique and amazing taste treat. It's smoother than a snow cone, and it combines ice with real fresh fruit. The real fruit adds dramatically to the taste, and it comes in over 40 flavors. The ice and fruit are mixed on site and made fresh daily, and it is delicious.
You'll want to know more about this exciting and successful franchise opportunity. Go to www.ownaritas.com and get all your questions answered. That's www.ownaritas.com to take control of your dreams and future today. You don't want to wait any longer to be a part of this adventure. www.ownaritas.com.
Who's helping build America one small business at a time? Franchise Inc., a free consulting service.
For years, Franchise Inc., a national company, has been helping people franchise their business concept and help folks like you own a franchise.
With over 2,500 franchise systems out there, it can be awfully confusing. Don't take chances with your future. At Franchise Inc., we've done the homework for you. We can help match your interests and background with the franchise that's right for you. And we only work with proven franchise systems with a solid reputation and track record of success.
The consultants at Franchise Inc. can help you with your short and long-term wealth strategy.
Give us a call today and we'll send you free our best-selling book, Solving the Puzzle of Owning a Franchise.
Remember, it's not just owning a franchise, but finding the right one for you. Call us at 800-961-0420 for a quick consultation to discuss what's important to you, your business, and your future.
The service is free. The book is free. What do you have to lose? Find the business that's right for you.
Call Franchise Inc. at 800-961-0420. That's Franchise Inc. at 800-961-0420.
Hi everyone, welcome back to Franchise Interviews, where we're asking the franchisepreneurs who own one. I'm your host, Marty McDermott, with my co-host, Don Johnson. And if you ever dreamed of owning your own business, then you've come to the right place. And today's show is being brought to you by Franchise Times Magazine. Franchise Times is the only magazine that targets both franchisors and multi-unit franchisees, and is a must-read for anyone looking to buy a franchise. How you doing today, Don? Welcome back.
I'm doing fine this week, Marty. How have you been?
good. It's you know, I was saying a little before the show, you know, it's been busy, you know. It feels weird to have not done the show for several weeks. You know, we've done some recordings and things like that, but
you're
yeah,
a world traveler, I mean, huh? You were out of the country.
Oh, now I can say that, like, I'm a big deal, you know. This is my first time in Europe, actually. You know, as you know, I made a presentation in Greece, and, of course, the topic was franchising, and, yeah, it was very well received. It was, I was there on behalf of Kaplan University, and it was an amazing trip on. It was just, kept not enough time there. I really didn't get to see everything that I should have seen, you know, and conferences
right.
and things like that. So,
yeah,
but it's a great place. I did have a chance, though, by the way, I don't think I told you this, to go into a McDonald's in Greece. You know, there wasn't a lot of franchise activity there, but and again, pretty much similar. You know, there's some differences, but I think they had a shrimp burger. You know, it was like one of the biggest differences that I noticed. But otherwise, it was McDonald's. You know, so.
Right.
So it was. It was pretty interesting. I know you've been pretty busy as well, haven't you? Finishing up the summer and getting the kids off to school and all that
yeah.
other stuff.
And they're in scouts and playing soccer and dance and all the stuff gets going. Waking up earlier, have to go to
exactly.
bed earlier.
Right.
Yeah, there's always,
you know.
Always stuff planned. As a matter of fact, tonight's back to school. I get to meet their teachers tonight.
Oh, okay, so it's a big night tonight. It's for
right.
them. That's fantastic. Well, just like I said, your kids are a couple years ahead of mine, you know, so it's playing catch-up to you, but I guess I'll be doing all that stuff in several years as well. Our
yeah.
last show, Don, if you remember, we met with Nick Pallas of No Limit Media Consulting, and if you missed the show, No Limit Media Consulting is a progressive communications firm specializing in public relations and also social media. They work exclusively with franchisors, and I thought it was an interesting concept. You know, anytime we talk about social media, and we've only done it, I think, maybe like two or three times in the 4 years that we've been doing the show, it's a fascinating topic, isn't it? Any thoughts on that
yeah.
last show?
Yeah, I mean, it was great to have Nick on. I mean, he knows his stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You're very impressed with,
yeah.
you know, just the time he was on the show went by so quick. We could have definitely spoke
yeah.
another couple hours about the subject. I mean, this stuff is just crucial. For businesses, he specializes in franchising, works with franchisors, and helping them with their website activity, just getting, you know, building that PR for the company and tying in social media, which is so important. The way he customs together campaigns for them. It's just, I mean, if you're a franchisor really looking to get a lot more exposure or a new system, for example, you know, definitely Nick is who you're going to want to speak to and have them custom a program and really get your company going in the right direction as far as there's a couple of things that can happen. It can lead to, obviously, more interest in the franchise and just making sure that company's doing all the right things to get maximum exposure and marketing
right.
and so forth.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's not easy either, Don. You know, this whole social media thing, you know, I mean, yes, it's true. It's amazing how many people have a Facebook page and LinkedIn and they're on Twitter and all that other stuff. But if you look at it, I mean, most people, I think, really don't know how to do it, you know, and this is where
right.
someone like Nick comes in, and he really provides value, you know, to what these franchisors are doing on a Facebook or a Twitter, whatever it may be, you know, it's
right.
a lot of them just don't know how to use it effectively, you know what I mean, there's no value, you know, and he got into that on the show as far as, you know, emphasizing that word value. It's very important. In other words, you know, if you're on Twitter, you know, and you and I saying, okay, we had eggs for breakfast this morning, you know, it's a big deal, you know, it's
right.
that's not how you use the medium, you know, so this is where someone like Nick does come in, and it's funny how all these guys, they're in franchising, and then they get out, right, and then they always come back.
Right.
I think he was one of those examples, wasn't he?
Right. Yeah, we've heard that so many times. People were in franchise, and they went to some other industry, and franchising, the love of it, I guess, just brought them back to the industry.
Yeah, most definitely. So we got an interesting show today, too. I mean, this is different, you know, from all the shows we've done in 4 years, you know, so I'm excited about this one. What do we got going on today?
Well, we're having the CEO of Hair Club New England. Stephen Barth.
Right.
He's been in business for 30 years. And yeah. I guess he represents several locations throughout a few states up in the New England area. So excited to hear about Hair Club and how they came about and how his business is going. Seems like he's doing very well.
Yeah, he's their most successful franchisee, which is why I was excited to have them on the show. And I'm familiar with this company. I think you are, too. I mean, you remember the old commercials, don't you?
Right.
With Hair Club for Men. You know, I mean, they've been advertising for a very long time now. I had some stats, too. Did you know about 30% of people have hair loss by age 30, 50% by age 50, 40% of hair loss sufferers are women. Hair loss yeah. and how to treat it is something that is woefully misunderstood. So, you know, Stephen is going to talk about some of those things as well. I mean, that's a when you're talking about marketing, we're talking some pretty big numbers here as far as how big the market
right.
actually is, you know, to
And we both have a lot of friends. I've seen friends start losing hair in their 20s. Some of my friends are just decided to just go completely bald. And it's funny because you and I don't really have that issue.
Thank God. That's the one thing I always say is, I say, although it is getting gray, though.
Right. Same with me.
I don't know if they have anything for that yet, you know, besides the hair dye. But, you know, that's another topic. Maybe there'll be a franchise for that one day.
Right.
But, yeah, you know, so it's going to be an interesting show today. This was something that we were sent on this week. I just wanted to mention, you know, one of the great things about franchising is how the franchise community comes together, you know, that a lot of times, you know, McDonald's will work with Pizza Hut and KFC, and you know, they're not all really in competition with each other, you know, and this is something that great that's going on. I just wanted to bring to our listeners' attention. It says, calling all franchise industry professionals, and I'm going to have to squint a bit because the font looks like it's like a size 5. It says, let's unite in support of breast cancer awareness and research. And this comes from Phoenix, Arizona. It says, once again, franchise industry professionals from WEB, W-E-B-B, or stands for Women Empowered by Business, are reaching out to get industry support to participate in the Susan G. Komen Breast Cancer 3-Day 60-Mile Walk in Phoenix, Arizona. This is taking place, by the way, on November 12th through 14th. So I was hoping that, you know, you and I can kind of remind our listeners that this is taking place. It says, after raising over $20,000 for breast cancer research in 2009, the Spiderweb team, the 2009 team of 10 walkers, has a goal of attracting 10 or more walkers, 10 or more sponsors, and surpassing the money raised for the cause in 2009. It says, last year was truly remarkable. We had 25 franchise partners reach out with enthusiasm to support our team as sponsors, said Judy Stolson, who is a business coach with the Entrepreneur Source, who we've had on the show many years ago. So, again, this is something, you know, that our listeners can look into. They see if they provide a website here. It says you can call Lori Till, T-Y-L-L, at 203-405-2122. I guess she's kind of running the cause. And so I think this is fantastic. You know, I love when you see the franchise community come together, you know, as a team,
right.
you know, and do something good and give back. And we've seen a lot of examples of that.
Right. We've read a lot of stories over the years. This is a great
yeah.
cause, and it's good to see people getting out there and helping others.
Oh, yeah, most definitely, you know. So, and of course, I'm always looking forward to your current events, you know, because
yeah,
I haven't done them in a couple of weeks. So what's going on in franchising?
Some interesting things. Well, first, the U.S. Census Bureau came out with some interesting statistics. We always try to get this out there.
Mm-hmm.
It says that franchise businesses accounted for 10.5% of businesses with paid employees in 295 industries.
Hmm.
Franchises accounted for $1.3 trillion of the $7.7 trillion in total sales,
okay.
total businesses, and $153.7 billion out of $1.6 trillion in payroll and 7.9 million workers out of the total workforce of 59 million. So
yeah,
it just seems like the franchise.
Blow you away, Don?
Yeah, it just shows you what a powerful force the franchise industry is and how it's
mm-hmm.
getting larger, and you know, the numbers keep moving up every year.
Yeah, and I didn't mean to cut you off, but it was one of the things I wanted to emphasize is I threw some of those numbers up on the big screen when I was making the presentation in Greece, and a lot of people were shocked at, you know, the numbers that are produced by the franchising community, you know. Again,
right.
Not a franchise industry, but the community itself.
Right.
Those numbers are amazing, so, yeah.
It says fast food restaurants had the highest number of locations with paid employees, followed by gas stations, convenience stores, and full-service restaurants.
Yeah.
So that makes sense. Here's something, Marty, Franchise Business Review. Before you buy a franchise, get the answers to these three questions. This is by John P. Hayes, who we've had on the show.
Yeah,
he's been franchising
a
long time.
I reference him in Greece as well.
Yeah. So I thought this was an interesting article. It says crazy excuses. I decided I wanted to work for myself, not someone else. A franchise broker showed me a half dozen concepts, and I liked this one best. It's the hottest business to be in right now, and I wanted one. My father told me it was a good business, and he put up the money. Here's the point. I could go on, but what's the point? There are all wrong reasons for buying a franchise. In fact, those aren't reasons. They are crazy excuses, and they almost always lead to grave disappointments. When people buy franchises for the wrong reasons, they usually live to regret it, or sometimes they pray not to. Oftentimes, it wasn't the hottest business, and even if it was, the franchisee wasn't cut out to own the business, with or without daddy's money. Oftentimes, these franchises fail, and the franchisees lose their investments.
Yeah.
And it talks about three questions you must answer. If you want to avoid becoming a sad statistic in franchise history, there are three questions you must positively answer before you investigate a specific franchise concept. In fact, answering these three questions will keep you from spending time and resources looking at the wrong franchises, and they will ultimately help you invest in the right franchise, providing that buying a franchise is the best thing for you. It's not for everyone. Frankly, it amazes me that so many people buy franchises without knowing these three points of information. The first one he talks about, do you know the profile of a successful franchisee? Do you know the values, skills, and behaviors of successful franchisees who own this particular franchise? They're not necessarily the same as the traits of a good employee, for example, or a good vice president or CEO. Just because you excelled in your Fortune 500 job, or you were Teacher of the Year, or a real estate tycoon, it doesn't mean you've got what it takes to become a successful franchisee. And he says here, Marty, valuable advice. Even before you think about writing a check to pay a franchise fee, you need to be absolutely certain you can describe the profile of a successful franchisee in that specific franchise network.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. I don't think we really kind of discussed that for that particular franchise system or franchisor. And, take their top 50 franchisees in the system and, you know, what do they sort of all have in common a little bit? What are they doing to be successful besides following the system? There must be some other things. They're very outgoing. They're very aggressive with marketing. Who knows? But it's an interesting point.
Yeah, no, the traits, I mean, yeah, are really so important. And, you know, it is amazing how many people get into franchising, Don. I mean, we've seen numbers from anywhere from, like, I think it's like 750,000 to approaching like 1 million franchisees, I think, in the United States.
Yeah.
My God, you know, I mean, that's incredible. A large percentage of those people probably never should have got into franchising, you know, because of what John said in that particular article. It is amazing how many people get into the wrong opportunity or even get into franchising when they're
right.
Probably like the
right.
Worst type of franchise possible, you know, so... yeah, he's really fantastic as far as putting things in perspective with this whole thing.
He says, caution, many franchisors cannot tell you the profile of successful franchisees and their network.
I agree.
It's just that they find out before you invest. Be sure you got it, he says, sir. Be sure you got it. Number two, do you possess the profile of a successful franchisee? Do you have what it takes personality-wise to succeed in this particular business? Do you have the values, skills, and behaviors of successful franchisees? Caution, most people do not. Franchisors should use personality profiles, but most do not. Therefore, if you think you've got the profile of a successful franchisee, you can't know for certain unless the franchisor can demonstrate that profile to you. He says insist on it, and then match it to the business. Number three, does your profile match the profile of the successful franchisee in the business you intend to buy? The question is the most important of all. Let's say you've identified the profile of a successful franchisee, and you know you've got the same profile. But for which franchise? He says there are at least 3,000 franchise companies in North America. They're all different. They don't all require different profiles, but many do. For example, a successful franchisee, and this is interesting for today's article, in the hair salon industry, just to pick an industry, may fall in the hospitality industry or the lawn care industry, just to pick two more. He may fail because he doesn't have what it takes to succeed in that different industry. Personality is by no means the only requisite to success. There are other considerations, including access to capital, location, and common sense, to mention a few.
It's a great article.
What is it else that you say here?
A lot of things. Yeah, we mentioned on the show, you know, it's...
It says there are more than 75 different industries that use franchising as their method of distribution. So matching a success profile to an industry and ultimately to one franchise company is critical. Miss this and you'll likely become one of those ugly statistics.
How do you feel about
that? That's
the whole profile thing.
Yeah, well, we always, like I'm sure on today's show, we'll ask what are some of the characteristics you look for in a franchisee. Maybe
that's
something...
We ask that question, don't we?
Yeah, maybe franchisors, some have to, you know, get more depth into this.
Right, go deeper, you know, than what their, you know, the typical responses, you know, that we get on the show. You know,
right.
It's an interesting point.
We should have John back on the show to discuss this,
Yeah, we'll have to get him back on the show. We had him on our three-year anniversary show, and he was just amazing. You know, I mean, the information that he gave our listeners was really fantastic. I think he's one of the best when it comes to talking about franchising. So, yeah, it's very good.
Here's also through Franchise Business View, 8 Habits of Successful Business Owners. Always motivated, goal-oriented, time management, money management, personal health, ability to adapt, risk-taking, good communication skills. I think I maybe had one of those myself, personally.
Did I say risk-taking? And the name of the article again, Don, was...
8 Habits of Successful Business Owners by Ronnie Deutsch Tax Center through,
Right. Okay, that's good. I mean, it's important. You know, I wasn't sure if they were talking about franchise owners or business owners, but, again, those are important. Those are things that we should probably post up on our website as well, you know. So good. So why don't we do this, Don? Those are great articles. I see our guest Stephen has called in, so let's do this. We'll take a quick break, and we'll be right back with more franchise interviews. Coming up in segment two, they're celebrating their 30th year of being in business. We're meeting with Hair Club New England CEO, Stephen Bart, and that's coming up on segment two of Franchise Interviews. Stick around.
Franchise Interviews. For over 2 years now, Franchise Interviews has been giving you an up-close, behind-the-scenes look at franchising and entrepreneurship.
Through our website, franchiseinterviews.com, where you can hear and read interviews, as well as get tips from some of the most successful sources in franchising.
And our weekly franchise radio show, where each week you get to hear a new interview with franchisors, franchisees, franchise authors, experts, and attorneys.
And our free franchise newsletter, which is a must-read for anyone looking to buy a franchise.
And don't forget to listen to our podcast, Great Quotes in Franchising. For more information, go to franchiseinterviews.com or call us at 610-905-2919.
That's 610-905-2919. Okay, you've got my attention.
It's a rare event in the world of franchising when an opportunity comes your way that can and will thrive in almost any economic environment. It's here, and its name is Big Mouth Advertising.
Big Mouth.
BMA is a leader in the exciting world of mobile media advertising. Why is mobile media advertising able to defy the economic cycles? The answer is obvious. In times of economic weakness, advertising is crucial for survival as the consumer dollar is scarce and the competition fierce. What is mobile media? It's the newest and fastest growing segment in the advertising world. Mobile media brings the message directly to the consumer. Mobile media goes to the consumer in traffic where he eats and where he plays. It quite simply cannot be turned off or thrown out. And when you join the Big Mouth team as a franchisee, you are joining the best. The Big Mouth advantage is simple and successful. We invest in a strong infrastructure and in great people. As a franchisee, you have access to this entire system, including telemarketing, sales maximization, general and administrative support, design and creative services, even billing and collection services. All you need is a mobile media vehicle, a driver, and the willingness to create a financially sound and limitless business for yourself. There are no long-term leases to sign, no expensive build-outs, no office personnel to hire. You will be part of the Big Mouth Advertising community and share its entire website and reception services, as well as its complete back-office services. This virtual office guarantees you the freedom to close those sales that will make you a success. We are so proud of our successes that we have voluntarily disclosed our revenue statements. Now, how many other franchises are doing that? Even in these historically rough financial times, Big Mouth Advertising has become a dominant force in the mobile media industry. Join the Big Mouth team and take the first step toward financial freedom. Please call Ron at 888-98-GO-BIG. That's 888-98-GO-BIG.
Big Mouth!
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Franchise Interviews, where we're asking the franchisepreneurs who own one. I'm your host, Marty McDermott, with my co-host, Don Johnson. And if you ever dream of owning your own business, then you've come to the right place. We have a great show today. We're meeting with Hair Club New England CEO, Stephen Barth. And this year is Hair Club of New England's 30th year in business. Stephen currently owns the New England franchise locations, Massachusetts, Connecticut, New Hampshire, and Rhode Island, and is Hair Club's most successful franchisee. Hey, Stephen, how you doing today?
Hey, guys, how are you?
Good, Stephen. Thanks for coming on the show. Stephen, joining us is my co-host, Don Johnson, and I know, Don, you wanted to say good morning to Stephen.
Yes, Stephen, good morning. We appreciate you coming on.
Well, hi, Don. I appreciate you having me.
Yeah, great. Thanks. Up in New England, huh?
Well, actually, right now I have to confess that I'm down in South Florida. And I'm calling you from a residential landline, so hopefully the clarity is there. But
It sounds good, Steve. Yeah, and I saw the 305, and I said, oh, I'm jealous. You know, I was expecting that, you know, the area code of New England.
Well, listen, don't be too jealous, because we've had monsoons the last couple of days, so it hasn't been really fun.
Okay.
And certainly not beach weather.
Well, we're getting hit up here today, too, in the Northeast with rain and just not a nice day up here today. So it's interesting. Stephen, it was interesting. You know, I was talking to Don before the show, and when I was giving the introduction, I felt compelled to say Hair Club for Men, you know, and that's how I always knew the company. That was the original name for Hair Club, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, you know,
when did the name take place, or when did you guys decide to change?
Okay, well, actually, in the very beginning, and I've been involved with the program now for over 30 years.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was right there at the ground floor of the brand building, certainly building that brand into, you know, the type of national identity we have and occupying or populating all the markets that we do. But I was there right in the beginning, right with Cy, and I know that you probably know Cy as our icon and spokesperson from the early days.
Right.
We were a single solution provider, which meant that we pretty much had one solution, one core product that we were offering people that were looking to reduce some of the stress of losing hair. And as we evolved into a multiple solution provider, all-proven solution, you could say, and we're the only nationally organized all-proven solution company with the type of representation we have nationally. And that also included, working with women. And so it became pretty obvious that the Hair Club for Men name, a brand, although obviously very strong, we have a lot of equity invested in it, needed to be sort of generalized a bit more. And that officially, legally, and formally took place, I believe, in 2005, although our relationship with providing services to women, you know, certainly many years predated that 2005 transition.
It was interesting. I didn't realize when I saw the stats, too, Steve, that 40% of hair loss sufferers are women. You know, I mean, that's pretty significant, isn't it?
It's actually profound. And, you know, we were working with women many, many years ago, and we were just obviously sort of transferring our technology and our procedures over to women who were seeking alternatives to, you know, what would have been the conventional wig or things that might have provided to some level aesthetic enhancement, but certainly didn't lend itself to an active lifestyle, which is, you know, certainly, you know, what we gear ourselves towards is our technology and our core competencies are about being able to improve one's aesthetic appearance, but also trying to give them the ability to enjoy that lifestyle and not taking something like a wig on and off where they're constantly reminded emotionally of the problem in the first place.
Right, absolutely. And what were you doing before joining Hair Club, Stephen? I mean, what was your background before that?
Well, unless I'm 80 years old, I was kind of a baby. So, you know, I've been in this program for a long time, and I was just coming out of college. And at the same time, concurrently, I was experiencing hair loss myself. So I had a very strong invested interest as a consumer. And in those days, there weren't a lot of options. I was in the New York Metroplex. I responded to a small, pretty unsophisticated newspaper ad for Hair Club. Went into the Madison Avenue office. This is going back to right around 1976. And believe it or not, my consultant was Cy Sperling.
Wow.
And I met with Cy, you know, in that office. And, you know, I was subject to genetic hair loss. My father, my father's father, my mother's father, it seemed as if, you know, the punch was clearly spiked.
Right.
And, you know, in those days, keep in mind that the tension that was, and the distress that was associated for losing hair for a guy was extremely, extremely strong. You know, the most popular play on Broadway was Hair, just to give you an idea as a reference point.
Right.
So, you know, it was really difficult in those days as a young guy to reconcile, you know, the whole hair loss thing. So you were definitely out there trying to chase down solutions. And, you know, there wasn't a lot available, but I was a pretty decent consumer even at a young age, and I found myself in front of Cy, and it was almost like two kindred spirits. We spoke for about 3 hours in this consultation. And, you know, I was kind of a, you know, poetic type of young guy that thought deeply about life's experience, and I think he latched on to the fact that I was able to put into words in a philosophical way, you know, what hair loss meant to me and how it was impacting my confidence and self-esteem. And, you know, by the end of that 3 hours, he was convinced not only that I was going to be a consumer, but that I was going to at some time work for him. And it, as it turned out, both turned out being the case. So I had the work done at that time. I was immediately thrilled with the results and became a very passionate spokesperson. So when I used to come in for haircuts, he used to always bring me into consultation where he was working with a prospect. And I guess to some degree I was inspirational to helping influence their decision to get involved, and that sort of segued to a consulting position that he offered me in New York City. And, of course, he only had the one center. And I became, I guess, really effective in motivating people. And at that time, we were trying to put into place the foundation for a national brand and trying to, put together a distribution network that was going to extend beyond New York. And we were also suffering financially. And one of the contributions I made at that time, of course, in addition to being a successful salesperson, was I deferred any sales commissions at the time because, quite frankly, so I didn't have the money at that time to pay me. So I worked without commission until we were able to sort of, you know, bring more sales revenue in, and then I got reimbursed. But more importantly, there was a very strong connection and commitment that was made between Cy and I through that initiative, and he made an offer to me to open up my own hair club in any market that I wanted throughout the country. And, I then chose, after doing some study, of going into Boston. And that was primarily motivated by the fact that we were mostly advertising. At that time, we actually evolved, I should say, and advertised in the New York Times Sunday magazine section, Roto section in New York, which, as you could probably suspect, had a pretty big circulation outside of New York and had a
right.
pretty good circulation in the New England area. So I figured that I'd try to leverage that and go into a market where there was some brand identity as a residual of the New York Times advertising.
Wow.
Pretty smart, yeah.
Good story, yeah.
So that start off well, Stephen, you know, right away. Maybe people familiar with the name, but business start off pretty good for you up there?
Yeah, you know, it went really well from the beginning, and I think a lot had – keep in mind, I should backtrack that I was desperately, desperately undercapitalized.
Yeah.
And there really wasn't much of a franchising organization involved, particularly when it came to support and business systems and applications. There was a lot of entrepreneurial spirit, a lot of great instincts, a lot of good integrity. But you were on your own. And I took an entire floor, actually a penthouse floor of a downtown Boston business building, which was, if you examine today the risk profile associated with that, it would probably leave you in a very risk-aversive mode. But I decided to go for it, kept every door closed because most of the space was unconstructed and looked like, we were either just moving in or potentially going out of business. Keep in mind the relationship with Hair Club is a long-term relationship, so the last thing that a prospect wants to be anxious about is if Hair Club, my service provider who I'm dependent upon, going to be in business, 6 months from now.
Right.
So anything that didn't have furniture, the doors were closed, and I did all the consulting, recruiting. We did well from the beginning. We needed to because I didn't have the capital to sustain. And actually, the Hair Club New England experience became the inspiration for really, in many ways, directly and certainly indirectly, for the expansion, into the national map. And any individual that was even interested in a franchise of Hair Club or getting the licensing rights to Hair Club products would actually come to New England. I would entertain them. We'd go out for dinner. I was the one that was actually offering up a lot of the financials as a pro forma, because in those days, the New York entity, which was the franchising entity, was constrained because a lot of the expenses that had that it was incurring, which was difficult at the time to absorb, had a lot to do with trying to invest and reinvest into building a national organization.
Wow.
So I then became the individual that started to actually expand throughout the country. And, today I possess the most licenses for an individual to market hair club product and services throughout the country. And actually, I've sort of consolidated a bit because in addition to all the markets, which includes Illinois and, of course, all through New England and Rhode Island and Connecticut and Tampa and Sarasota, I used to also own Dallas and Atlanta, and, you know, so we were very, very involved in developing that national distribution, which made national advertising more practical and efficient.
Right. True.
When you went up to Boston, were you a franchisee right away?
I was a franchisee. That's how it was structured. It was certainly, and to this day, a very preferred type of franchise contract, which is certainly not the same contract that is available today. Not that we're doing a lot of franchising, because you know the ownership structure for the franchising entity has changed considerably, and you know we can get into that if you want. But you know, the agreements that I had were grandfather agreements that sort of had a almost evergreen feature to it. So it gave me an opportunity to have preferred terms and to be able to expand and continue to expand. And that's, you know, how I developed sort of my organization within the organization, which is actually a very, very unique story. I was listening when I was on hold to, I believe, you know, this article that somebody was quoting from about franchising and profiles. And it was interesting to listen to this, and I think that there were many of the points that I would agree upon, and there were certainly a lot of other things that I would include. And I think that, you know, especially now in retrospect, you know, if I was going ahead and trying to pre-qualify a franchise program, if I was a franchisee looking for a franchise and a business opportunity, my filtration system would be actually very different than perhaps it was initially, even though I enjoyed a great deal of success with it, because, you know, there's a lot of important things you got to look at. You know, the internal supports, the equity that you put into brand building, the potential secondary market in the event that you wanted to, you know, try to exercise an exit strategy. What is your secondary market? How do you get an ROI on all that investment and all the equity that you invested in building a brand regionally? You know, obviously trending. Are you on the right side of the trending equation? So there's a lot of things to look at.
Right. Yeah, I was going to, the next question, Stephen, to describe the hair club franchise system when you do have an investor. And then that was also one of our questions later on, kind of what you look for when you have a prospect. Because like you said earlier, hair club now is a lot different in services. I mean, it was for men back then. Now it's for women. There's so many other types of, I guess, specific services to help people. But how do you describe the system when you speak to a prospect today?
Well, you know, we're not really, you know, actively looking for franchisees at this point. You know, we have most of the primary markets, secondary markets, and even third-level markets covered. And essentially, you know, you're talking about a very durable and mature brand name that has penetrated many of the DMAs throughout the country. You know, we sort of calibrate a lot of our, calibrate a lot of the desirability and viability of a particular market based on direct response advertising, particularly using TV as a primary advertising vehicle, although, like everybody else, we've been getting more and more involved with internet strategies and being able to realize the benefit of the efficiency of advertising on the internet. But TV [S2] Right. [S1] Still remains a very big part of our communication portfolio. And so we are very well penetrated and very mature. So there's not a lot of franchising opportunity in hair club right now.
Does that include international?
You know, we qualify internationally. We have office in Puerto Rico. We have offices in Canada. And as a matter of fact, as we speak right now, you know, we're looking at United Kingdom. I wouldn't call us a international franchisor. You also remember, by the way, approximately, I hope I'm not wrong on the timeline, but I would say approximately 6 years ago, there was a pretty big event that took place where Hair Club and the franchising entity, the entity that actually has the intellectual property rights and that manages the franchising and owns the franchising right and sub-franchising rights, changed hands from a private owner into a public owner. So the Hair Club for Men and Women is now a division of Regis, which you probably heard of, which is a publicly traded company out of Minnesota. And I'm sure you're familiar with Supercut.
Yeah, they have many haircutting brands, yeah.
Yeah, they have many and also hair salon products.
Right.
And they are certainly international, and they have over 10,000 units in salons. So that was obviously a very transformational event that took place for Hair Club. And we have actually become, I think, or have emerged as one of their most successful divisions.
Wow, that's interesting. I didn't know that, being affiliated with Regis. And that just happened in the last couple of years, Steve?
I'd say probably goes back about 6 years, and I could be a little bit off on that, but that's approximately when they took over that the Hair Club branding and Hair Club franchising.
Yeah.
And they've been a terrific strategic partner. So we've been very happy with that. We see a lot of potential synergies, particularly with their very vast distribution platform and, you know, how that could be synergistic potentially with Hair Club and being able to expand the potential end-user base. But I know a lot, I'm assuming, guys, that a lot of the people that are listening are people that are, you know, looking at franchise opportunities and looking at developing their own business. And, you know, so I don't want to, you know, of course you're going to regulate that, but I don't want to go too far off track because, you know, I have a lot of years as a franchisee and as a brand builder and somebody that was at the ground floor of developing a national sales strategy and national sales sales distribution platform. So, you know, if I could be of any help during the course of the remainder of this conversation about, you know, some of these things for people that are listening, I'd be glad to.
Great.
Yeah, it's interesting. Something you said earlier on, you mentioned the whole relationship factor, and that's very important. This is one of the things I love about this particular business model is I was thinking about the lifetime worth of a customer, you know, particularly when they're a lot younger and they start using the service. It's pretty significant, I imagine. I don't know if you can get into specifics, but
it's actually very significant, and that was that's a terrific part of the model. We have a recurring sort of annuity revenue model,
mm-hmm.
And so even though we are an all-proven solution, and let me clarify what that really means, we provide all the most viable and credible solutions for men and women alike who are trying to seek out a hair restoration option. Now, that, of course, is going to, you know, be driven by their motivation, their objective, and, of course, perhaps what phase of the life cycle of hair loss they may be at the time. So we have made that transformation from being a one-solution provider into a multiple-solution provider. And those multiple solutions right now are our non-surgical biomatrix head of hair, which is our core and is obviously a very, very much of a sophisticated, evolved version of what I got involved with over 30 years ago. That there is a maintenance element associated with that solution, and that's what I'm referring to as that sort of annuity revenue model because, you know, once somebody decides to get involved with that solution, we do recommend for them to continue to come back, to become part of a membership culture so that we can continue to attend and be their hair people. So the lifetime value, as you very intelligently refer to, is very strong there. We also provide another solution for people that are usually at more the beginning phases of hair loss as sort of measured by what we call the Norwood scale, which is an actual metric which is able to identify what level of phase of hair loss you're at. And if you're more or less in, you know, more the beginning to mid-level of phase of hair loss, you know, it's very possible that a hair and scalp wellness treatment therapeutic program might make a lot of sense. And, you know, that's pretty much a combination of in-clinic and also out-of-clinic protocol, a therapeutic protocol, which is to try to optimize, you know, the scalp and to try to bring it into a much healthier therapeutic condition so that the general quality of the scalp as well as the hair can improve. One of the components to that particular protocol is minoxidil, which, as you know, is an FDA-approved hair-growing topical solution. But again, you know, our goal and objective for, you know, if you're appropriately matched for that particular solution is to, again, elevate the wellness and therapeutic qualities of the scalp and those values of the scalp through this in-clinic and, you know, out-of-the-clinic therapeutic regimen. And then, of course, the third solution, viable solution, are for those that are at a point where they want a more aggressive intervention, and that would be in the form of hair transplants, which obviously you're probably pretty familiar with. And hair transplant surgery has made incredible improvements over the last 10 years. And at Hair Club, we have a staff of surgeons who are specifically trained to a microfollicular unit surgery, which is absolutely the most cutting edge and certainly the most aesthetically effective surgical procedure that's available. And those surgical clinics are located in a number of markets and regions, and that model, business model, is more of what would be a sort of spoke-to-hub model. And as you know, a surgeon is the only one that can authorize surgery, and now it's perfectly legal for a surgeon, as long as he's, you know, properly licensed, of course, to authorize surgery through telemedicine, which is, you know, obviously over the Internet, where they can, where a photograph, a very clear photograph of the prospect can be conveyed over to the surgeon, and they could determine whether they're a viable candidate for surgery. And, you know, that's sort of, you know, the potential starting process, particularly if you're remote from our surgical clinic. So those are the three solutions that, you know, we're representing and, you know, that has evolved at Hair Club over the years. Which has made it a very, by the way, which has made it a very durable brand. And I think that that's what's really interesting as a business model. It's a very, very durable brand that has been able to continue to keep its, you know, self sort of at the cutting edge. We put a lot of time and energy into research and development. We have a lot of quality assurance standards. We have a lot of internal auditing to the quality and the technical standards that, you know, we have to subscribe to. Big training programs. You know, we have a very, very sophisticated IT infrastructure. So there's a lot of, you know, pretty good things going on there.
That's interesting. The majority of our listeners right now to our show, Stephen, are aspiring entrepreneurs, most likely looking to buy a franchise or they're considering buying a franchise. What advice would you give to them as far as their quest goes?
Yeah, I think that you know, obviously being able to match up profile-wise, which was part of the loop that I was listening to on hold, you know, to what it is that you may be potentially distributing or whatever service you may be providing is always obviously part of that. You know, I saw also an emphasis on communication skills. Listen, you know, communication skills, salesmanship, the ability to exercise an influence over a prospect's purchasing decision is obviously always key. I think it's very important for you to, you know, get a good handle on, you know, the market and the market share. What is the, you know, the specialty or the competitive advantage that somebody may have by representing a particular brand or being a licensee of a particular franchise? Internal support, support that's being offered by the franchisor, who ordinarily probably has the self-assigned responsibility of monitoring the integrity of the trademark, which is a very, very important feature of a franchisee and franchisor relationship, because, you know, it's a good chance that you're going to make some type of pro rata contribution into marketing and communication pieces. And I think that it's important that, you know, the franchisor, who also realizes the benefit of that contribution, is also very vigilant in making sure that there aren't small vendors and, knockoffs that come in that try to exploit that type of advertising, particularly in your marketplace, that gives them an unfair competitive edge. So certainly that internal support is extremely important. You'd like to see them relatively mature as a franchisor, obviously properly and lawfully registered in the various states, and particularly the state that they may assign as their domicile state for franchising. Scalability is really important. Are the products and services that you're buying into, do they have scalability? Can you continue to leverage a relationship with a prospective end user base and get incremental added value by nurturing that relationship, which will obviously create a lot more efficiency in your sales revenue. Secondary market opportunities, and obviously the extent of the franchise contract, the term. I mean, the last thing that you want is you want language on the contract that commits you to contributing to marketing, and, you know, you got 5 years on a franchise contract, and then all of the discretion, to renew that contract is pretty much on the franchisor. And, you know, if that isn't renewed, and perhaps there's no material default on the part of the franchisee, then, you know, what do you do with the equity that you've invested in building that name locally?
True. Yeah, that's true. That's a good point. I think we have about 60 seconds. What's the best way for our listeners to get more information on your services? Are there any websites they can go to, anything they can take a look at?
Yeah. Hairclub.com is our website. And
that's easy enough.
So, we're located in most of the markets, and I would say that it'd be pretty hard pressed for somebody to be more than 45-minute car ride from any hair club center.
That's fantastic. I want to thank you again. You've been a great guest, and we'd love to have you back in the near future.
Thanks a lot, guys, for having me, and appreciate your time too.
Thanks a lot,
Steve. Thanks, Steve. Have a great day.
All right.
Good show. I'm done.
Yeah, very knowledgeable of his business, his industry, franchising, just in general, someone looking to go into business.
Yeah, it's amazing watching the history of this company. You know, it's again, being right here in the Northeast, and I've been familiar with the commercials, you know, not since I was a kid, you know, so it's amazing when you look at where they are now, today, you know, in 2010, it's just fascinating. So, yeah, I thought he did a great job. And good job, Don, on segment one today. And thanks again for our listeners for listening. And go to franchiseinterviews.com, franchisefunding.net, gofranchise.com. And we have another great show scheduled for next week, Don.
Yep, keep going. Thanks, Marty.
Good job. Talk to you soon. Take care. Thanks, everyone, for listening.